Welcome to the Deep Dive, where we take a stack of information, could be research, articles, maybe lecture notes, and pull out the really key nuggets for you. Today, we're diving into, well, one of the body's real unsung heroes, the urinary system.
It definitely works behind the scenes.
It does. And we're using a fantastic lecture from Dr. Ty C.M. Hoffman as our guide. His notes really light up how intricate it all is.
Yeah, his breakdown is excellent.
Okay, so let's unpack this. Dr. Hoffman's lecture, it takes us on this detailed tour, you know, starts with the big stuff you can see.
The microscopic structures.
Exactly. And then drills right down to the tiny, tiny powerhouses doing the work.
The microscopic level.
Our mission today is basically to give you a shortcut to understanding how your body handles fluid balance, filters out waste.
Keeps everything running smoothly.
Right. And there are some genuinely surprising bits about how cleverly it's all designed.
What's great about Dr. Hoffman's approach is how he takes something that looks kind of simple, you know, on the surface.
Yeah. Kidneys, bladder, seems straightforward.
But physiologically, it's incredibly complex. And this deep dive, I think, will really show how vital it is for your overall health. It's always working.
Constantly. So kicking off then, what are the main players Dr. Hoffman introduces?
Okay, so the key components are the two kidneys, obviously, then the ureters.
The tubes.
Yeah, the tubes running down. And the urinary bladder. Dr. Hoffman points out, look, anatomically, macroscopically, it's pretty simple. But the function is where the complexity lies. He really stresses that the kidneys are the most important, the most conspicuous organs here.
They do the heavy lifting.
Absolutely. They're making urine constantly, all the time. But we only void it intermittently. He uses the term micturition.
Right, micturition, peeing.
Exactly. And the bladder.
Yep,
it's just
yep.
a super convenient storage device. Imagine if you didn't have it.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Continuous production, intermittent release, that makes sense. And location-wise. Dr. Hoffman mentions something specific about where the kidneys sit.
Ah, yes. They're retroperitoneal.
Mean.
Behind the peritoneum. So they're kind of tucked away, embedded in the back wall of your abdomen.
Gotcha. Not just floating around in there.
Not at all. And a cool little detail he includes. The right kidney usually sits a bit lower than the left one.
Why is that?
The liver. It's so big on the right side, it just pushes the kidney down a bit.
Makes sense. And they have some protection.
Some, yeah. Your lower ribs offer partial protection, which is good because they're kind of vulnerable back there.
Okay, so that's the outside. Now, this is where Dr. Hoffman gets into the really interesting stuff. Inside the kidney, we all know the shape.
The kidney bean, he actually points out that's why we call the beans kidney beans.
Huh. Okay, so what's under the surface?
Well, first, there's a tough outer layer, the fibrous capsule, protection. Peel that back, and you see two main regions inside. There's the outer part, the renal cortex.
Superficial, yeah.
And then deeper in is the renal medulla. And the medulla is interesting. It has these triangular structures.
Renal pyramids. I remember that term.
Exactly. And the way urine collects is quite specific. It drains from these pyramids into these little cup-like things.
Goblet-like.
Yeah, goblet-like minor calyces. Then they merge into larger major calyces.
Okay, collecting funnels.
Kinda. And those all drain into a bigger bowl-shaped area called the renal pelvis.
The main collection bowl.
Right. And that then narrows down to become the ureter heading out of the kidney.
And where does all that attach? The vessels and the ureter?
That's at the hilum. It's like an indentation on the kidney where everything connects blood vessels in and out, ureter going down.
Right. The connection point. It sounds like a really intricate internal plumbing setup.
It is.
But for this whole filtering factory to work, it needs, well, raw materials. Specifically, blood.
A lot of blood, right?
Yeah.
Dr. Hoffman really emphasized the blood supply.
Oh, it's incredible. The volume is massive. And you ask why? Because the kidneys are essentially filtering your entire blood volume over and over every single day.
So the renal artery, which is a big branch right off the main of abdominal aorta, brings a huge flow of blood to each kidney.
Okay.
Then inside, that artery branches like crazy, segmental arteries, then interlobar, those run between the pyramids.
Oh, okay.
Then arcuate arteries, which kind of arch over the pyramids. Makes sense.
Yeah, but arcuate arching. Got it.
Then cortical radiate arteries heading out towards the cortex. And finally, these branch into the tiniest arterioles, the afferent arterioles, which feed the actual filtering units.
Afferent meaning going towards.
Exactly. And the veins basically mirror this pattern on the way out. Cortical radiate veins, arcuate, interlobar, all collecting back into the main renal vein.
Which dumps into?
The inferior vena cava. The big vein going back to the heart. It's a super efficient loop designed for constant cleaning.
Okay, so massive blood flow, intricate structure. Now, the core filtering unit itself, Dr. Hoffman calls it the functional unit.
The nephron, yes. Functional unit means it has everything needed to do the kidney's job, all packed into one microscopic structure.
And you said how many?
Over a million per kidney.
That's just mind-boggling. A million tiny factories in each one.
It really is. And Dr. Hoffman details two main types. There are cortical nephrons, mostly up in the cortex.
Makes sense.
And then juxtamedullary nephrons, juxta meaning near. These are nearer the medulla. And crucially, their long loops dip way down into the medulla.
And why are those important?
They are absolutely key for concentrating urine. We'll get back to that. But it's vital for saving water.
Okay, vital. So two types. But every nephron, Dr. Hoffman says, has two main parts.
Yep. The renal corpuscle and the renal tubule. Think of the corpuscle as the filter part.
Okay.
It's made of the glomerulus. That's the special ball of capillaries we mentioned, getting blood from the afferent arteriole.
Uh-huh.
And Bowman's capsule, which is like a cup surrounding the glomerulus, catching everything that gets filtered out.
So filter and catcher.
Pretty much. And what gets caught, the initial filtrate, then goes into the renal tubule. And that's where the real processing happens.
A long, twisty tube.
Very twisty. It starts with the proximal convoluted tubule, proximal meaning close to the star.
Okay.
Then it dives down into that U-shaped loop, the loop of Henle, especially long in those juxtamedullary ones.
Right.
Comes back up and then twists again through the distal convoluted tubule, distal meaning further away.
Proximal loop, distal.
Got it. And from there, the processed fluid flows into collecting ducts, which gather fluid from multiple nephrons.
Okay, so that's the pathway. We've got the structure, the blood, the nephrons. Now, the action. What do the kidneys actually do? Dr. Hoffman outlines three key processes.
Yes, three critical steps happening in sequence, mostly along that nephron tubule. First is filtration.
Only in the glomerulus, you said?
Only in the glomerulus. No. It's driven just by blood pressure forcing fluid out of those leaky capillaries.
Mm-hmm.
Dr. Hoffman describes them as especially leaky.
Mm-hmm.
And the key thing here, it's totally based on size.
Yeah.
Small stuff gets pushed through tiny slits, water, glucose, amino acids, salts, waste products like urea.
So good stuff and bad stuff all mixed together.
Exactly. It's not selective about need at this stage. Just size. Big things like proteins and blood cells stay in the blood. The fluid that gets squeezed out is called filtrate. Importantly, it's not urine yet.
Okay, so it throws out a lot, including useful things.
Yeah.
Seems wasteful.
It seems it, but it's actually super efficient because the next step cleans it up. That's reabsorption.
Ah, taking back the good stuff.
Precisely. This happens all along that renal tubule we just traced. The body actively pulls back the things it needs. Water, glucose, amino acids, useful ions, moving them from the filtrate back into the bloodstream.
Okay, reclaiming valuables. So it filters almost everything small, then takes back what it wants.
You got it. And then there's one more step. Secretion.
Secretion. So putting things into the filtrate.
Exactly. It's kind of the opposite of reabsorption. This also happens along the tubule. It's where the body actively transports unwanted stuff from the blood into the filtrate.
Like what kind of stuff?
Things that maybe weren't filtered well enough initially, or things the body actively wants to get rid of, certain drug metabolites, excess potassium, or hydrogen ions, maybe some toxins. It's like a final check to dump the trash.
Filtration, reabsorption, secretion, FRS. So after all three are done, then it's urine.
Pretty much. Dr. Hoffman clarifies that by the time the fluid reaches the end of the collecting duct, after filtration, reabsorption, and secretion have all had their chance, then it's officially urine. Its composition is final. It won't change after that point, even sitting in the bladder.
Wow. A three-step purification process, a million times over. That's incredible.
It really is metabolic engineering at its finest.
So that covers waste removal brilliantly. But kidneys are also masters of water balance, right?
Yeah.
How does the body decide? Keep water or let it go? How does it make concentrated urine when needed?
Another amazing mechanism Dr. Hoffman explains. And those juxtamedullary nephrons are key here. Remember, their long loops go deep into the salty medulla.
Right. You said they were crucial for concentrating urine.
Exactly. The kidney sets up and maintains this incredible concentration gradient. It gets progressively saltier as you go deeper, from the cortex down into the medulla.
How does it do that?
It's largely the loop of Henle. The descending limb, going down into the salty part, is permeable to water, but not much salt. So water gets pulled out by osmosis, making the filtrate inside the loop more concentrated.
Okay, water leaves, stuff inside gets more concentrated.
Yep. Then the ascending limb, coming back up, is the opposite. It's impermeable to water, but it actively pumps salt out into the surrounding medulla.
Pumping salt out. That must maintain the saltiness down there.
Precisely. It keeps the medulla salty, which is needed to draw water out of the descending limb and, crucially, the collecting duct. This whole loop system is called a countercurrent multiplier. It sounds complex, but it brilliantly creates that gradient.
Okay, so a salty medulla is established. Then what?
Then the collecting ducts, carrying the final filtrate, have to pass through the salty medulla on their way out. And this is where the thiaquinine happens, controlled by a hormone.
ADH, antidiuretic hormone.
That's the one. ADH basically tells the collecting ducts whether to let water out or not. It does this by controlling special water channels called aquaporins.
Water channels, like little gates.
Kinda, yeah. If you're dehydrated, your brain releases more ADH. ADH goes to the collecting ducts, opens more aquaporins, water flows out of the duct back into the body because medulla is so salty, and you produce very little highly concentrated urine. That's antidiuresis, saving water.
And if you're well hydrated?
Less ADH is released. Fewer aquaporins open in the collecting duct, water stays in the ducts, and you produce lots of dilute urine. That's diuresis. It's how urine output perfectly matches what your body needs moment to moment.
That is incredibly clever. A hormone controlling little water gates based on how much water you have.
It's a beautifully precise feedback loop.
So once this perfectly adjusted urine is made, it needs storing. Which brings us to the bladder. Dr. Hoffman moves on to this temporary holding tank.
Indeed. He describes how the two ureters, carrying urine down from each kidney, enter the bladder on its back surface. These entry points are the ureteral orifices. These two orifices, plus the exit point at the bottom, the internal urethral orifice, form a triangle shape on the bladder floor. He calls this the trigone. It's an anatomical landmark.
Trigone. Got it. And it's important, he says, to distinguish ureter from urethra.
Yes. Ureter, kidney to bladder. Urethra, bladder to outside. Simple, but easy to mix up.
Right. And he mentioned a difference in the urethra between sexes.
Yeah. In females, the urethra is relatively short and only carries urine. In males, it's longer, passes through the penis, and serves double duty, carrying both urine and, at other times, semen.
Okay, functional difference there. Now, what really struck me was Dr. Hoffman's point about the bladder's ability to stretch. It's amazing how much it can hold.
It is impressive, isn't it? Its distensibility. He attributes this to its special lining.
Transitional epithelium.
That's it. Unlike most epithelial tissues that are just one or a few layers thick, this stuff has many layers. And the cells themselves can change shape from kind of columnar or cuboidal when the bladder's empty to really flattened squamous-like cells when it's full and stretched.
So they flatten out without tearing.
Exactly. It allows the bladder to expand hugely without compromising its lining.
Yeah.
Very specialized tissue.
That makes sense. Okay, so Dr. Hoffman then kind of zooms out, right? Puts the urinary system in the bigger picture of total body water.
Yeah, connecting it all. He notes an average adult body is, what, about 40 liters of water? Roughly.
Wow, that much.
Yep. And it's divided into compartments. Most of it, maybe 25 liters, is inside our cells. That's intracellular fluid, ICF.
Okay, water in the cells.
The rest, about 15 liters, is outside the cells, extracellular fluid, ECF. And that's further split into the fluid bathing the cells, called interstitial fluid, and the fluid part of your blood, the plasma.
ICF, ECF, interstitial fluid plus plasma.
And the key point Dr. Hoffman makes is these compartments aren't isolated. They're constantly talking, exchanging water and solutes. There's continuous movement between plasma, interstitial fluid, and intracellular fluid.
And the urinary system is crucial for managing all that.
Absolutely critical. Along with, you know, breathing, eating, drinking, the respiratory and digestive systems, they all work together to maintain this fluid balance.
Yeah.
He reiterates that key idea. Urine is basically filtered blood.
Right. Stuff filtered out.
Minus the stuff reabsorbed.
Plus the stuff secreted in.
Exactly. And he specifically mentions nitrogenous waste. Urea is the main one.
From protein breakdown.
Yeah. Protein metabolism produces toxic ammonia. The liver converts that ammonia into less toxic urea, and then the kidneys efficiently filter that urea out into the urine. It's a major way we get rid of nitrogen waste. He even notes your urine might look different depending on protein intake.
Interesting connection. So with all this fluid moving around, intake, output, how does the body actually balance it day to day? Dr. Hoffman gave the numbers, didn't he?
He did. The daily water budget, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Intake isn't just drinks. A surprising amount comes from metabolism itself. Burning glucose and fat actually produces water.
Metabolic water. Huh.
Yep. Plus water in your food, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And then beverages. That's the in.
Okay. And the out.
Well, some water's lost in feces, though the large intestine is pretty good at reclaiming most of it. Then there's sweat. which can vary a lot.
Sure, depending on heat or exercise.
Exactly. And then these insensible losses, water you lose without noticing, evaporation from your skin just passively, and water vapor and the breath you exhale.
Right. You don't really feel that happening.
Nope. So you've got all these inputs and outputs. How does the body ensure homeostasis, keep everything stable?
That's where the kidneys come in again.
That's the genius of it. Urine production is the most variable output. Your kidneys adjust how much water they excrete to perfectly match your intake and other losses.
So if you drink a ton of water,
less ADH, lots of dilute urine, kidneys get rid of the excess.
And if you're dehydrated, didn't drink much,
more ADH, kidneys reclaim as much water as possible, producing very little concentrated urine. The goal is always total water in equals total water out, maintaining that perfect balance.
Wow. From that simple bean shape we started with to this incredibly complex dynamic dance of filtration, reabsorption, secretion, hormonal control, Dr. Hoffman really showed the sophistication, didn't he?
He absolutely did. It's constantly quietly working to keep us in balance.
Understanding those intricate processes, like Dr. Hoffman laid them out, it just highlights the body's amazing ability to self-regulate, doesn't it? Maintaining that internal stability.
Without us even having to think about it most of the time.
So what does this all mean for you listening? Well, next time you grab a glass of water or maybe feel thirsty after a workout, just think about the incredible detailed work your kidneys are doing right then behind the scenes.
Constantly adjusting.
And maybe it raises a question for you to think about. In what other ways is your body's hidden machinery constantly adapting, working tirelessly to keep everything just right inside, even when you're completely unaware?
A lot to ponder there.
Definitely. Thanks for diving deep with us today.